Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, listening audience. Thank you for tuning in to Talk Straight and being a part of a national dialogue designed for proactive change. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. I'm grateful again to engage each and every one of you in very important conversation. I need your help as I endeavor to take this message and the conversation we share on air to targeted cities and urban areas across America with the hope and desire to improve the quality of lives by engaging communities and proactive strategies. You can be of great help by going to our webpage, www.bfcinstitute.com. Click on the donation tab or the contact us tab and find ways that you can assist us by either purchasing our items or just making a donation on our secure PayPal site. If you are a business or someone who would like to make a corporate level contribution and you would like more information, please give me a call at 615-498-4669 or send me an email at bfcinstitute@gmail.com. That's bfcinstitute@gmail.com, or give us a call at 615-498-4669. We are glad to share with you and provide you all the necessary information to help you make the decision to support us in our traveling lecture series.
Well, greetings and welcome to another episode of Talk Straight. This is July the 13th, 2021. Here we are again, and we are sharing with you in yet another episode on our national dialogue here. Grateful to everyone who has joined us thus far and who will join us again tonight. We look forward to robust dialogue. For the time that we're on, we anticipate that to be between an hour and a half to 2 hours, depending on the flow of the conversation. All right. Your host is Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. Our co-host is Pastor Ricky Walla. We hope that he'll be able to join us here soon. But more importantly, we hope that you can join us. The number to call is 657-383-0944. That is the number to call in the studio tonight, and you can participate live in our dialogue here. If you're listening from the podcast of the blogtalkradio.com platform, you can feel free to give us a call again at that number, 657-383-0944. We do have a specific topic tonight, so allow me to hurry on and get to our monologue, and then we will be happy to entertain questions and comments and dialogue tonight. The utopian concept of freedom in our country, America, offers a false sense of optimism that people of every walk of life might automatically framers identified as life, liberty, and happiness. By becoming an American citizen, being born here. However, for two centuries or greater, the challenge that has to be fostered and maintained in order to have healthy race relationships between two of America's sons, that being the white man, quote unquote, and the quote black man, end quote. I know they're superficial phrases, but for the sake of our conversation tonight, we share them. It's something that most people can readily identify with. My point is that two of America's sons, two of them, the white man and the black man, share America. There's a rift, a competition, a battle, if you will, between them And the argument is that everybody is not equal, everybody's not happy, and that the rights and privileges of citizenship is not befallen on everyone equally. So join me tonight as we talk from the topic, how to conduct race relations, how to conduct race relations in America. Again, the number to give us a call here tonight, love for you to join us, is 657-383-0944. And this brief monologue, I hope to proffer a process or path, if you will, of consideration. I think we estimated about 300 now and 30 to 45 million Americans, according to the last census count. And that has grown since the last. And what that means is that there are a whole lot of people. So invariably, there are a whole lot of different interests, perspectives, interests, focus, right? So to assume that all black people, if you will, African-Americans, Negroes, share the same ideology, the same vision, the same perspective or interest is somewhat supercilious. Likewise, to assume that all white people likewise share a thing is supercilious, that they all fall in the same category, feel the same way, they see things the same way. So we want to look at this in terms of conducting race relations. Now, my alma mater, Fisk University, Charles Johnson ran the Race Relations Institute at Fisk University on the campus there. I believe it was established around 1941. Not only that, but other places, other institutions around the country strive to have this conversation, this dialogue. Obviously, something or someone has kept the tension, the frustration, the friction alive. I would argue for monetary purposes. As long as there's conflict, there's money to be made. On this July 13, 2021, we're going to look at some things that will empower individuals to have good, healthy race relations. Now, I really don't like using that term race because I believe as a social scientist that it's superficial. But again, it's something that we can identify with in the context of our conversation tonight. Okay? So let's begin. Galatians, the third chapter, verses 28 and 29 reads like this. There is neither Jew nor Greek. There is neither bond nor free. There is neither male nor female. For ye are all one Christ Jesus. And if ye be Christ, then are ye Abraham's seed and heirs according to the promise. Beloved, there was a certain promise made to everyone who belonged to the Creator and the Savior of the world, character we commonly know as Christ. Irregardless of what your pigmentation is, your orientation, your socialization, if you fall under that banner, there's a promise made to you. I like to think that we all in America can pursue that godly promise in addition to the promise of American citizenship. And I would argue that if we put God first, the rest of it will take care of itself. But I didn't come to preach, so I won't stay there. We're talking from the topic, how to conduct race relations in America. Let's lay out a few definitions, okay, so we can have some context. And we'll come back to this later on. When we talk about race, in general, it's the classification of humans into groups based on physical traits, ancestry, genetic factors, and even social relations, or the relations between those groups themselves. First used to refer to speakers of a common language, and then do denote national affiliation. The term was often used in general in a biological sense, starting from the 19th century or so. It was intended to denote genetically the differentiated human populations defined by their phenotype, their physical structure, you know, for instance, your nose or your lips or your eyes, your ears, your forehead. Those general classifications were Negroid, Austroid, Mongoloid, and Caucasoid. All right, you may have heard that before, but when the term race is used, it's making reference to that. And it's a, I believe, a futile attempt to try to classify people by, again, these phenotypical features. What happens, though, is when you start having miscegenation where there's blending and mixing of people from various classifications phenotypically, then you have a variance or then what do you do? This is why I say it's a superficial term. And nonetheless, we move on. So that's what race is. In terms of relation, y'all know this, it refers to anything that involves communication. Huh? Well, really, we talk about people, human beings, that relate to one another via communication. Right? Individuals, groups of people, society as a whole, more importantly, our country called the United States of America. How well are we communicating? Are we communicating at all, collectively speaking? All right? Let's look at, consider, I want you to consider the nature of the problem here. All right? Now, it is an indisputable fact that a part of America's short history over the last 245 years or so, there's been some stains, black eyes, if you will. Slavery was one of them, chattel slavery. That which was practiced in North America from roughly around 1619 to formally 1865, but informally 1863 with the Declaration of Independence, right? This institution was designed to make money off of the labor and the production of human beings who originally came from the continent of Africa, largely. Okay? And different from indentured servitude, this was designed to fully take over their human rights and to dehumanize them in efforts to withdraw any chances of that conversation we talked about, life, liberty, happiness, for them as individuals. Again, for the sake of sheer profit. Now you know that the Congress just passed a landmark piece of legislation relative to Juneteenth, June 19, 1865 was that date that the general came in and informed latecomers in Galveston, Texas, that Lincoln had 2 years earlier made a proclamation that they didn't have to be slaves anymore, that they were free. They don't have to conduct themselves in that way. Subsequently, in 1865, however, 36 states ratified the 13th Amendment of the Constitution. So Lincoln's effort became constitutional by way of an amendment, the 13th Amendment. Now, does that mean that in the context of those historical events, there was not harm done? No, it does not. But guess what, beloved? It also means that it's not necessary to continue to relive that pain and that harm when everybody, America's white brothers and black brother, understand that's a part of how we got here. Moving forward, we're going to recognize that and respect one another, and we're going to avoid repeating certain things. Together, we do that in the interest of living in peace and harmony in the United States of America. Now, further, 1857 what you had was a major Supreme Court case, the Dred Scott decision. There the Supreme Court held that a Negro whose ancestors were imported into the United States and sold as slaves, whether they were enslaved or free at that point, they could not be American citizens, and therefore they had no standing to sue the federal courts, in federal courts, I should say. Now, why is that necessary? Why is that relevant to our discussion? Well, because this was the first landmark case, and later it was overturned. All right? Yes, I want to make the point that there were some things historically that were ugly and nasty, mean-spirited, right, for the sake of economic gain through the agrarian system of slavery, all right? Now, so moving forward, when Lincoln passed this Emancipation Proclamation, this executive order by the president then on January 1st, 1863, it changed the federal legal status, right? In many ways, for more than 3 million slaves. And in various areas designated throughout the South, they were made free. Not all over America, but in those places where these southern states that had moved, pulled away from the Union, they were by fiat of the president now, said to be free. But it took blood, sweat, and tears, white men and black men dying on the battlefield of America during the Civil War, to finally settle that. Let me say that again. White men and black men shedded their blood on the battlefields of America. For what? Over what? But more importantly, in 2021, here is the silver lining. We have an opportunity, white men and black men, to make the best of a bad situation. We can communicate with one another. It's grown men. We can decide that we can live together. Does that mean you have to stop being black to live with your white brother? No. Mean you have to stop being white to live with your black? No. But you respect whatever difference you might have. And a lot of times, let's face it, we're talking about heritage. We're talking about embracing a certain cultural context, not necessarily your biological phenotype or physical features or genetic features, but the substance of who you are in terms of your character. You understand? There are great lessons to be learned from Afro-American history and Afro subculture prior to American experience. Just as there are some very iconic cultural elements of various other European or someone to use, say, Caucasian cultures that came and blended and made America. All of this, beloved, made America what it is in the 245 some years that it's been around. We just celebrated a birthday earlier this month. So what are you saying, Doctor? What are you saying? I'm saying that America is a place that has, by its constitutional order, open its arms and welcome a lot of different people for different reasons. The argument can be made that the Native or the Amer-Americans didn't ask for it and didn't invite everybody. I believe that there's a historical argument to be made that that's true, right? And there's some work to be done there. But if you pay attention to it, there have been some federal regulations and some laws that have strive to, at least, if not fully doing so, compensating and making whole the Native or Amer American that were here, the indigenous people. More than 20 million immigrants, though, arrived in the United States between 1880 and 1914. Who were these people? These were people who saw a promise established by the Declaration of Independence, the preamble to the U.S. Constitution, and ultimately established in September 17, 1789, in the United States Constitution. They saw that, and with little or nothing in their hands, just the clothes on their back, they made great efforts to get over here, right? Most of them were Southern Europeans who came, and they wanted a part of the American dream, huh? Eastern Europeans, we call them Jews. They wanted a part of the American dream. They sought to protect themselves and their religious rights from the persecution they were facing over in Europe. You know, the World War One and World War Two was pretty rough and brutal on many of them, right? But some would argue that because the Europeans shared biological features of what we call white American, a white man, that they had an edge over the Negro. You can take that position, but what is important is that you look at the letter of the law and how it established the rights of citizenship for every American citizen. As we talk about conducting race relations, let's start with that understanding that what establishes a right as a citizen is just the state that you live in, right, as well as where you have residence, where you have physical residence. And that's what established your rights as a citizen initially. Now, you're born in the United States of America, according to the Constitution, you're naturally an American citizen. Parents were here in Europe, and that sort of thing. And, of course, there are other ways you can become naturalized. What are you saying, Doctor? I'm saying simply that this rift, this friction that some race baiters are trying to maintain and keep going here in the United States is causing a lot of people, and particularly young people, to be more and more confused and frustrated, angered, and lost. You see, we can keep on looking at the various cases and events that are documented in history. You can do that from then to now, right? But the reality is you're not going to do anything if you don't take the position that I choose to get along with folks. Now, in order for that to happen, that means I have to behave. I have to do something, right? I have to keep myself in check and in order. That's what that means. It's not about pointing the finger, finding blame with somebody else. It's looking at yourself and asking yourself, what am I doing to maintain good, wholesome, healthy relations with not just whites, Hispanics or Asians or anyone else of any other ethnicity or heritage, Somalians, the whole nine yards. You understand what I'm saying? That's a choice that each of us make. Now, I understand the driving force behind it, right? Back in 2021, there are many young males of Afro heritage or ancestry who exhibit aggression throughout what I have phrased here as urban America. Why? They're experiencing, I call, the violence continuum. What is that, Doctor? This continuum begins with the lack of knowledge of how to prepare and establish themselves. It falls into frustration that stems from a false assumption that they've got to be afraid of not knowing what's going to happen. That's that fear. The longer this information, this misinformation, this fear, this feeling that I'm at risk continues, guess what? It evolves and it develops and festers into anxiety. And over a prolonged period of time, this anxiety manifests itself in violence. So if you really want to help black males who are at risk in America in 2021, sit them down and tell them the truth. Tell them, look here, there are more opportunities now in this decade than there ever have been. You have more freedoms now than you ever have. There's nobody making you take any substance in your body. Nobody's making you go rob anyone. Yes, you got to work for it. Yes, you must work for what you want. But there's nothing stopping you from having what you're willing to work for. Let me say that again. That's what we have to sit. Take the young cat, sit him on a sycamore tree or something. I don't care, in the alley. And tell him, look here, young brother, check this out. Whether they white or black, you looking for an enemy? Well, look in the mirror, as your biggest enemy is yourself. If you can conquer that enemy, you can conquer anything. You understand? Let me offer five suggestions, healthy relations among various races, particularly America's true son, black man and a white. I'd like to hear from you, 657-383-0944. I'm finishing, wrapping up now, conclusion of the monologue, and I want to hear from you. In the interest of improving race relations in America, I submit to you that these five things, I'm not suggesting that they're holistic, they're the only five things, that there's nothing else, but certainly these are things for you to consider, would be helpful, right, to the descendants of America's eldest son. Blood that was shed in that brutal battle of the Civil War over ending slavery, it was blood of white brothers and black brothers. In fact, Lincoln gave a historical address in Gettysburg. Well, he noted that fact. He noted that if we continue on that path, that's what we'll continue to see. But what troubles me more than anything else is that the bloodshed that I see on a regular basis, particularly the blood of young black brothers, come from one another. We're shooting and killing, hating one another. That's what we can end. That's what we must end. Get to it, doctor. All right, here these things are. First, beloved, white and black folk, it would be helpful if we acknowledge American history, the good and the bad, and we seek to learn how to avoid those mistakes. I didn't say read something into American history that's not there. I didn't say that. I said accept it for what it is, the good and the bad. Read it word for word literally, as the record is, right? Recognize that people are not measured by whether or not they are black or white. Say that again, Duffin. You don't measure folks by whether they black or white or your notions of what it means to be black or white. But you measure them, as Dr. King said rightfully, by the content of their character. When people say something to you, when they show themselves believing and accepting, they ain't lying to you. That's who they are. But you deal with them accordingly. Then, if necessary, for us to be able to take the step of forgiveness. Uh-oh. Forgiveness. Yeah. No, you done me wrong. I ain't gonna never forget. I can forgive, but I ain't gonna forget. Not just black people say that, but white brothers and sisters say that oftentimes. But let me tell you something. Brothers and sisters, black brothers and sisters, until we can forgive ourselves for our own failures and mistakes, it's going to be hard for us to be able to forgive somebody else. And that needs to happen, but it starts with you. All right? Respect. Respect. There are a lot of people who have different views. I've mentioned this at the beginning. They have different ideas about how the world should be and how what happiness looks like, what liberty looks like, right? What life is. But if you respect people from the get-go, you can get along a little bit better. Just because I'm fathead and good-looking don't mean you got to hate on me, okay? Just respect that. Hey, even though I got a fat head, I'm good-looking. They don't take nothing from you. You understand what I'm saying? Respect. acknowledgement, forgiveness, respect. And it's important that we teach, especially our young folk, the truth. What I say? Teach them the truth. The truth will make them free. And they can make a conscious decision on what is and what is not based on their understanding of the truth. Not me having an agenda and trying to send them down a primrose path by them believing, accepting what I say. Tell it just like it is. Yes, slavery was ugly. It was nasty. But guess what? It ended. And since it ended, there have been more opportunities in the last 154-plus years since 1865. There have been more opportunities than there ever have been. Some people don't know about them or how to take advantage of them, but they exist. Teach them the truth. Then lastly, if you apply that in your life, guess what? You can go to ball games. You can go to the grocery store. You can walk up and down the street, and we can show mutual respect for one another's space, for our culture, our expression. You don't necessarily have to do what somebody else does just because they do it, but you can respect them for who they are and the fact that they embrace it, that it's what they do. See what I'm saying? That's a mature approach. That's a very mature approach to this thing. As we get ready to go to the phone lines, I'd like to invite you to hear the late, great Brother Marvin Gaye. February 13th, he sang the national anthem at one of the basketball games. And he was said to have expressed a desire from God, or a desire of his, that God will use him to touch the hearts and the souls of not just black people, but white people in America, and everybody that were American citizens. Listen to him. 657-383-0944 is the number to call. We love to hear from you here on Talk Straight. We're talking from the topic, how to conduct race relations in America.
Person have to be whole and, you know, okay with yourself, you know, that not just black, white, any race. And then secondly, like you were saying, once you love and respect yourself, then you can kind of accept and embrace others.
Right.
So
right.
I think, again, self-accountability first is key. And whatever you do or whatever you're trying to, you know, help mend or fix.
Right. I shared three questions in our Facebook motion and on the podcast here. And I'd like to just go through them if you don't mind. And as others join us, we'll bring them into the discussion. I believe that if we answer these questions, it would help understand the first importance, right, of conducting
mm-hmm.
and then the process by making sure it happens. It's not much you can do 30-72 for grown folks, old folks who are set in their ways and not really, they're not looking to change. They ain't looking to make no changes. And I respect that. I'll give you an example as I cue up this question. I ran into a young lady who is a smart entrepreneur. Shit, it matters, she's African-American. And the young lady was struggling to put together a little thing where businesses, other young people come and display their wares, right? And like a farmer's market. And so she knew that I sold insurance and everything. And I said to her, well, I tell you what, my agency will do is we'll invest in you. Okay? We'll be one of them. I can't promise you who else may come. And it looked like she was having a kind of tough time trying to get it all together. I said, well, you got one, right?
Right.
But I was impressed with the fact that she was not out angry looking for an enemy and an excuse to hate anybody. She was busy,
mm-hmm.
huh, trying to mm-hmm. act on her dream. I thought that was quite impressive. And
yeah.
even though this was an anecdotal situation, she's not the only one I've seen do that. What it said to me is everybody is not like the media suggests, angry, ready to fight and want to test them up. There's some people busy
right.
trying to do something. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
In a small way, I hope that the seed that we planted in it is going to help her go somewhere. So the question is,
yeah.
if at all, how does race factor into an individual's success or failure in America in 2021? You like to take a stand at this.
How does race factor in? It shouldn't factor in. Race should not be the determining factor whether you are a success or not, even with past historical blocks,
mm-hmm.
stumbling blocks
mm-hmm.
in the road,
mm-hmm.
current
mm-hmm.
barriers, economic, so whatever. I mean, it should not, but sometimes it does because I heard you mention earlier in your monologue there about, I don't know what was the word you used, being, a victim or something to that extent. Unless you're making yourself, I can't remember the word to use. But, yeah, so, I mean,
the violence continuum? Or the violence, is that what you're
No, you were speaking on how a lot of people or young black males even think that they are targets or whatever the case be.
Yeah.
Right, you should look at yourself like you're guilty if you're not of anything, is what I'm saying.
Right. Yeah, victimization, self-victimization, I think that's what you're making.
So, right,
yeah.
Especially if you know you haven't committed any crimes, you haven't done anything, and you know within yourself, just because somebody else want to be prejudiced or biased or whatever the case be, that doesn't make whatever their assumption of you accurate.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. And there are some bad people, right? You run into some real clowns.
mm-hmm.
Just because they're clowns don't mean you have to be a clown with them. You understand
mm-hmm.
what I'm saying?
Or because they want you to be a clown. Because you remind them of a clown that they saw, don't mean that that's what you are.
That's true. I think you're trying to preach on me, girl.
mm-hmm.
No, seriously, though. And when you're young and you really haven't been around long enough to realize that life don't owe you anything, right?
Yeah.
I believe it was the Sinners that sang the song, "It Takes a Fool to Learn," that love don't love nobody. But you got to put some work in there.
That reminds me of, coming up as a child, you out with all your little friends and somebody break wind. And the guilty one going to start talking about, ooh, something stank. Somebody stank. Something. I mean, why are you going to jump if you know it ain't you? Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah, somebody stank is probably, you know. So, yeah,
exactly.
Just because people yelling, some bad, some wrong, some stank, you say, hey, ain't me.
You got to check yourself, right?
Keep it moving.
Hey, 3072, take your hand, put it in front of your mouth, and blow, right? And see what kind of odor come back at you. And then you kind of know where that smell is coming from. No, we laugh, but we're just trying to laugh a certain fact into the conversation. And that is, when it's all said and done, you got to ask yourself, no matter what has happened or what is going on now, what is my response? And see, this is how you measure an individual's growth or the context of their character, not by the fact that they're challenged with poverty or stricken with an illness or setback, they lost everything, right, a calamity. That's not the measure. The real measure is how well do they sustain themselves.
Yeah.
We have what I call that mentality, shoot, I did all of that for nothing. But if you did it because you had a sincere desire toward an outcome, a goal, even if things didn't go like you wanted, it wasn't for nothing. You see what I mean? It was for something. It was for something. And this is what motivates you to get back up and to try again, because you realize what you were going after. It was for something, and it was something that you sought out for. Even if you didn't get it right now, you're still alive. You have an opportunity to get it again.
Yeah.
So, but yeah. And in the greater context of things, as we move forward, I would love to see public officials, people of influence, unify themselves in the effort to tell our babies that despite what you see in social media, on television, things are not as bad as they appear to be.
Yeah. I don't even know if the youth is just going by what they see. Social media. But the news even, because, you know, there's a number of younger people that don't watch the news. But, yeah, social media, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok.
News.
Yeah, I guess so.
That's their news source. They're not going to read very much. They're not going to research, but they're going to go straight to those sources that name for their information on a day-to-day basis, current evening. And you know individuals on those sites have a individual interest in putting a certain narrative, a certain story. See what I mean? You know,
what's interesting is you've made a good point about that being somebody's news, but not just their news, but a daily, you know how it used to be back in the day where you sit up and watch TV all day. Well, now you watch your phone all day because, you're just, and I've been guilty of it myself. On the off day, lay in bed up until, one or two, just scrolling, reading different little stuff on there and this and that. But, the reality is all of those things has been scattered and sought out even to report. So, I don't know. Maybe that's a good thing for people to put that down some and not have it so much, because just like then, too much TV was not healthy. Too much of social media is not healthy.
You know, there are people who literally face depression if they lose or don't have access to some of those devices that allow them to constantly feed on those things.
Yeah.
Young children feel like I'm nobody if I don't have some kind of device. And that's amazing that in our nation, country, we've come to that point where an individual's self-worth is based on that. One of the things that they're finding with the COVID restrictions and what have you, and efforts to try to keep everybody healthy, safe, is that the staying at home has caused a lot of young people to attempt, if not commit, successful suicide.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because they just wasn't, that's what the diet is saying. It wasn't meant for them not to be able to interact socially and you know what I mean, be among their peers. What they're looking at, and it's preliminary because you really don't have enough information, but it appears as though for many of them, their whole social context was arrested and changed and broken up by not being able to simply go to school, interact with their peers, go to extracurricular activities, sports, and you understand, things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
So for young people, that's what they become used to and aspire to, and when that was put on halt, it caused, it spiraled into a lot of things. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Now, what on the flip side of that is that crime didn't take a vacation because of COVID.
Oh, man. It certainly
and,
did.
And the people committing crimes didn't stop because of COVID. See, that's the one thing that COVID didn't have any effect on. Amazingly. So, you listen to Talk Straight, 657-383-0944, the number to call. Facebook, we'd love to have you join us there. Just give us a holler right here in the studio. On the podcast there, feel free to give us a call. If you're listening to our conversation tonight, we're talking from the topic, how to conduct race relations in America. How to conduct race relations in America. Now, I don't purport to have all the answers, but it's certainly a carefully thought out question. So, and we got a sweet lady out of Jacksonville, Florida, who's giving us some pretty good information, too. So why don't you join us here, 657-383-0944. We're just having a dialogue here in reference to that, and we're grateful for her to join us for as long as she can tonight. So, 72, the other question that I posed in the Facebook group, excuse me, sorry, you're making me sleepy, 72. Why are you doing it?
No. Oh, look, I think we're doing it to each other then.
And that was germane to what would it take for people from different ethnic experiences to be able to have a meaningful and respectful conversation? What do you think it would take for that to happen?
You know, I don't know. I think part of social media and the news is kind of, that is a positive thing that's coming out of a negative situation, that more things are being brought out as far as race issues go. So people are forced to have conversations because, every time you look up, you got, the anti- Asian bill, hate bill and all this and that other stuff. So, I mean, it's causing conversation. While I will say this, and I'll leave it alone, they don't have a anti-African-American, deal where we've been getting killed and hosed and everything else for years, and they ain't got that, but they got that. So that's the conversation. While I do think it's wrong for any race of people to be targeted, be murdered or mistreated or anything, but that was interesting to me. But, again, it sparks conversation. So.
That's true. And let me pick up on that. Now, isn't it true that while Jim Crow was a nasty experience for Negroes, and black and colors in America, right after slavery. But isn't it true that certain laws restricted that greatly and stopped public officials from being able to do it legally? If they do it, it's illegal, right? And there's some recourse to face the law. But hasn't that improved for African Americans, do you think?
I feel like it has, while they still have a long way to go, but yeah.
Okay.
The redlining, for instance, in the housing arena. That was horrible. And, they still today try to find, not they, but some, try to find other ways, you know, to do that without it being so noticeable. But, yeah, it has improved because back in the day, they can just simply tell you no and without giving you an explanation.
Yes, for the last about 60 years, excuse me, or so, U.S. housing has laws now that prohibit redlining. If you can
prove
that.
Yeah, they still try to do it.
Well, but now they can go to jail, and they can lose everything for doing it. You see
what
I mean?
Yeah, if they get caught. Uh-huh.
And if you have a legitimate case, you have a right to take that and have that adjudicated in the courts of the law. And that's my point, that, yes, you said if they get caught. And if you're experiencing that when you document your experience, right, and you look at what is supposed to happen by the law and what didn't happen, what happened to you,
Yeah. You
can make the
Yeah. Case.
As opposed to being angry and just saying, forget it, they're going to do what they want to anyway.
No, well, some people have made cases is what I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead, finish the statement, then we'll introduce
the new
call.
Some people have made cases and have documented and have taken things to court, and it was still
right. Thrown
out when, you know, they know the bottom line. But again, to your question, yes, things have gotten better some, but we still need work.
Okay, I take your point that there's still work to be done. We're talking from the topic how to conduct race relations in America in 2021, and our good friend out of Nashville, Brother Outcast, is joining us, 1098. Welcome, sir, to the conversation.
Where you been at? Where you been, 1098?
Working and sleeping.
Well, hey there.
Hey, look, you've been trying to take care of your family. That's...
All right.
I just did wake up now. No. I don't even know what's going on. I'm just listening.
Okay, all right. Well, we appreciate you. No, we were just talking. I raised a question. What will it take for people to be able to have healthy conversation, blacks, whites, Hispanics, or whoever, right? What would it take for us to have healthy conversation, dialogue, get along with one another within social arenas and whatnot? I'm not saying you got to. You know what I'm saying? You got to go out and have no beer with nobody or throw yourself on anyone, but at least having healthy interaction, you know. What would it take, Alcan? And that's essentially what we were just speaking to there.
Collect your thoughts.
Go ahead.
Blacks conversate every day. Blacks and whites conversate every day. Different nationalities of people conversate every day, but at the end of the day and at the end of the conversation, neither one of them trust each other. So dialogue always been on the book, you know.
Yeah.
Conversation
yeah.
is conversation, you know.
Right.
At the end
right.
of the day, you know, neither race trusts one another. So
it's
my take on that.
Yeah. I wonder if there's any hope for there being greater trust. Yeah, I guess the thing is the narrative that's out there is simply along the lines of what you look like on the outside.
I think
so.
What people observe you or in your life you doing to me. That's how I do it. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Right.
A good example, I had a coworker ask me to give her a ride home, and I said yes because from what I could see, she looked okay. I mean, I could have been wrong, but, yeah, there are some other people there that I just would have, no way, I'm sorry. No.
Okay. Well, here's the thing. There's a narrative out there that you got to be on edge, and there is a clear enemy, and the enemy is white people.
Mm-hmm.
It's a narrative that's been floating for some time now. And what happens is you paint everybody with a very, very broad brush.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the problem comes in, because you have to assume that whatever you call white, everybody that's white is your enemy. And that's where, Outcast, you start breaking down of the opportunities to build trust, if that makes sense to you. I hope I'm making that clear. And so that's one of the issues that we should. I said earlier, Outcast, that I realized that if you're old and settled in your way and you ain't looking to change nothing different, that it's futile to try to have this conversation with you. But for a lot of young people, I've seen a lot of young males and females very interested in really trying to kick off a business and do something for themselves. They just don't have the right support, right, and the right voices of influence. And they're out there looking for it. They ain't looking to fight. They ain't looking to tear nothing down. They ain't looking to make nobody enemy. They're just trying to make some money in America. I'm sorry, Outcast, I cut you off.
Oh, no, that's good, man.
Yes.
Nothing
but
nothing.
No, that's good. That's good. So it's helpful to realize that, yes, there are historical issues. And I started off with the monologue by identifying some of them. I didn't go through all of them. But there are a lot of examples of historical events where things were terrible toward Negro, Black, and colored folks. Yeah, that's part of America's short-lived history thus far, right? Now, the question is, as an American citizen, what is it that individually you can do and we can do collectively to either improve on that or to erase the stain? But I don't know if you can ever erase it. It's a part of
history. That's what I was trying to say, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a part of your history, but you don't have to keep reliving it. That's what I want. That's what I'm trying to say.
But guess what? I would bet that people within in their own white communities are having these same conversations about blacks. As far as, you know, like you said, most black people feel like can't trust the white man. Well, the white people feel like you can't trust the black.
Okay.
Not all of them, but a lot of them.
Right.
So amongst themselves, they talk about things like we're talking about now.
I had the most interesting experience out there. And I don't think she meant any harm. I really don't think she meant any harm. She was just young and ill-informed. Young lady, this was about just before the shutdowns and what happened. Young Caucasian female. This was right after, last campaign I ran or what have you. I happened to have been speaking to her. I'm not sure exactly how the conversation started, but she proceeded to explain to me why black lives matter. And the whole time I'm sitting there with a grin on my face, as old as I am and as much gray as I got, bless your heart. I'm not sure she knows the difference between her toenail or eyelid, as young as she was, because she's going to... And I knew what was happening is she was following the narrative, right? And the motive that's behind the narrative, I'm not sure she really understood. So I listened, and I was able to get across to her that, sweetheart, I hear what you're saying. And in case you can't tell, I'm what most people for a long time call a black man. I was born a black baby. Live the life of a black boy. Here I am, a black man. I've been black 3 times. And guess what, Al?
I thought you was white.
What? Whenever my time comes, I'm not trying to speed that up, but whenever God decides to call me home, I'm a dad black.
Okay.
Hey. But it was interesting to hear her, bless her heart, try to make the case and try to repeat to me what she had been told about the essence of a black life. And it was really funny because she never stopped to consider that, doggone, it's a black man I'm talking to. Or, I don't like to use the phrase, but for the sake of conversation, are I not one of those that you're talking about?
Well, I had same thing happen with the lady at work, the time when all the riots and stuff was going on. She was Caucasian too, and she actually had joined whatever little group thing they had here, and she was trying to persuade me to go and march with them.
Ah.
Now, and particularly, I honestly did not care for this lady. So I'm sitting there laughing to myself like you, like, you know, how you going to tell me about a black life that matter? I know mine damn matter, and I don't need to march or for them to tell me that it do, you know, to make me feel I know that. And whatever right. the case be, I still had the respect and understanding, even with not caring for her personally, that, you know, I respected that even though she wasn't black, it mattered to her. So, and like I was telling her, so if black lives actually matter to you, it should matter mm-hmm. every day, not just during the time, you know, when everybody is angry and marching and this and that. You should just respect black lives 24/7, 365, yeah. and teach your children yeah. that. And there you go.
So what happened in effect is somebody created a new fan that they labeled as black.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And novelty of that fan, it looks good. I noticed that people have signs in their yard where they have a mm-hmm. common slogan, what we believe. That's cute, right? That's cute. But in reality, at the end of the day, we had a situation right here in Nashville where I understand a five-year-old was grazed
mm.
because somebody at 5 o'clock in the morning saw fit
mm.
in the black neighborhood now. In the black, mm. And I'm hard to believe there was somebody white or Asian or Hispanic that came over and shot this house up at 5 a.m. in the morning
mm.
and hit a five-year-old child in the arm or in the shoulder. You understand what
wow.
I'm saying?
Yeah.
If you want to have a real conversation about black lives mattering, that's a good place to start. You see? Now,
yep.
I'm sure your lady friend or this young lady would be hard-pressed to place themselves right on the scene there and try to explain that then in the context of those gunshots and what have you when the heat is on. But it feels
well,
good and looks good to be able to get out with a bunch of people and say something, and you understand, feel like you validated that.
I think that, honestly, though, to her, she was just acting off of not just the fad, but conviction even. You know what I'm saying? Like some white
yeah.
people, I see some Caucasians out there really on a crusade for that. And not
sure.
just
Me?
For fad, but because of trying to correct the wrong, maybe that a family member or their generation or, you know, I've heard people speak on that. You can't, you cannot pay for what your grandfather or his pappy or somebody else, what you can do today is make sure you don't make those same mistakes. But you know what I'm saying? Right. I can't hold you at fault for that if you didn't do that to me. Now, your grandpappy
look,
ain't nothing in my mind, but I ain't mad at you.
Here's the thing. Like you said, I didn't do it to you. There are a lot of sisters who are angry because of the poor and the terrible experience they had in relationship. And every
yeah.
male they come across, they're going to
yeah.
play well. Huh?
Yeah.
But guess what, baby? It wasn't me. I ain't do it. I love you like peanut butter love Jeff.
That's right.
It wasn't me. Hurt you, baby. In fact, I love you.
That is the truth. Mm-hmm.
And it's the same thing here, just because, and that's why I went through the monologue to lay out historically some very, very, very bad things that happened to Negro, Black, and Color folks in America. But we live in 2021. If you want to be arrested and stuck back then, you can, but it will inhibit your forward progress, right? As we move forward, how do we conduct ourselves in a way that we can get along with everybody? First, ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you ask me, the first thing we need to do, Don, is to stop whoever that was went over there. And I hope they catch it. And they bring them to the full extent of the law and shot up that house with them babies in there.
Yes,
and
Lord.
That's doggone. If I could, I'd go whoop they behind myself. But they put me in jail.
What side of town
was
it?
This is over in North Nashville in Bordeaux.
Oh, okay.
I mean, but it is what it is. And Don tells us about them killing one another down in Selma. You told us about some people clowning in Jacksonville, Florida. And they looked just like you, didn't they?
Look, like yeah, I was reading in Chicago, this man got out of jail, was with his 60-whatever-year-old grandparent or whoever. That man got shot over 42 times. Another innocent bystander was hit, and the old woman he was walking with was hit in the leg. But, yeah, ain't no white people do that.
I mean.
he didn't last a darn 30 minutes at the prison on the street.
Wow.
As soon as he get out trying to walk to the car, they get him. Yeah, and the bottom line is, you're right, they do not care about anything or anybody else that's around that what they claim their target is. And that's sick. I hope that they do catch whoever done that.
Now, that's why we need to catch our young people and explain to them, despite the harm that has been done historically, right here and right now, there are things you can do to keep yourself healthy and to improve relations first among black folks, and then you may be able to talk to white folk a little bit better. Yeah, I hate those expressions, but it seems to me, we're welcoming 8112 out of Peoria, Illinois, and Don out of Selma, Alabama. Coming right to you, Peoria. Don, how you doing, sir?
Doing all right. I'm listening to you.
We're talking from
to you.
How to conduct race relations in America in 2021. That's our topic, 81.
Mr. Duffy, I think it's in-house. Listen to this, Mr. Duffy. What happened when you see the security at the school that might be organized in a game in a middle school? The security itself.
That's interesting, man. Wow.
Lane Moore's Divine National Movement. So who are they?
Okay. Well,
so you feel
I don't know
when you say, see what I'm saying, and then you wonder why certain things go in the neighborhood and, you know, the educational institution in the neighborhood is not reflecting what it needs to reflect in the neighborhood.
Okay, I take your point.
The educational institution, if it's educating, especially in the black belt, they would be building houses. They ain't building no houses. They ain't building young boys that are building houses. So who is this law enforcement and security and school teacher that's in the system? Who is that?
Well, I want to piggyback off of what you're saying in partial agreement with you, not just in the little security thing, but whoever there too, it was probably on the little gangbanger stuff. Now that things are getting better, like we were talking about, somewhat for black people or for people in general, laws and regulations are becoming more lax to be more fair, while let's still create more room for, like you were saying, maybe somebody that don't care. They just want a paycheck, and you're going to bring your mess there to the school, or you're going to bring your mess to the hospital, or you're going to bring your mess to the jail where you work, and now you making unsafe situations for everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
That is
what
irritates and frustrates me. Now, here we are trying to get an opportunity and a chance, and these fools are out here screwing things up again, trying to take us back to zero.
Yeah.
Mr. Darby, you got a system set up now politically where the political leaders getting paid to miseducate, dumb the folk down.
What?
See what I'm saying?
On, man.
Yeah.
On, you mean talking about professional politicians? That's what you're talking about, John?
Politicians are getting paid to make the people dumb.
Wow. 8112 didn't want me to become one of them politicians, man. Is that right, 8112?
Excuse me?
You don't want me to become one of them politicians, but you like, wait a minute.
I don't want you to be a bad politician. I wish you well on all your endeavors.
I know.
You got your good and
your
bad with most things.
Yeah. Any comment on our general topic and our discussion thus far? 12?
Not really, because I haven't really been involved that much right now.
That's okay. All right. We got the prodigal one with us too. 1098. He's been working hard and what have you, and he's joining us tonight. And for as long as he can, we're happy to have him there. But in general, our topic, again, was about how to conduct race relations. Now, Don, I'm hearing something from you and 72, and that is, it starts with you first.
Mm-hmm.
Huh? Communication starts with you first. And if you're not prepared to not just open your mouth, but by your action, make it plain who you are and what you're about. I told my son, is in Cleveland, Ohio now. He works in that area. And I said to him, you know, a lot of your safety has to do with what you do, who you hang with, your circle of friends. You understand what I'm saying? Because you establish your own reputation. And if you have a reputation of being with folks who are always in mess, keeping up trouble, or, you know, getting caught up in things that are not productive, then it's easy for somebody to make someone. Yes, sir.
What happens when you got a family that's off in the mess like that?
Uh-oh. You really in trouble then, ain't you,
Doug? See what I'm saying? See what I'm talking about? You got a family. You know what I'm saying, that's off in the mess like that, and don't want to teach the child correct.
Yeah, that's rough. That's kind of rough, son.
You know what I'm saying? See, the parent, he the one got to teach the child, but if the parent letting the child do the foolishness.
Now, and here's the guise, though. Here's the disguise, son. Here's the cloak that many people hide under. Well, you know, that's just how black, that's how we do with black people. That's what gets my goat right there. But wait a minute, man. What that mean? Somebody help me.
Well, yeah. So I'm black, and that ain't how I do. That's how you do.
You know, black people do it like that. Again, everybody, and I made this point in the monologue, even African-Americans don't share the same position on many of the social events and things that are going on, right? They don't embrace those things. And so to assume that just because they look the same way phenotypically, that they all think, act, and agree on something, you're setting yourself up for disappointment and failure. Because you're going to learn a way that everybody all looks alike and all dogs don't bite. Everything that shine ain't gold. Have I got a witness, done?
All right.
Yes, sir.
So let me pose. I asked those first two questions. Let me hit the last question. And we posed these on our Facebook thread when we did the promotion here. The question is, guys, that's the answer. What should or who should take the first step, Don? I'm gonna throw it at you first, to tear down any barriers that may exist to have good, healthy relationship among, and I, for the lack of a better term, black men, white men, and others. Who should take the first step, Don?
I guess you have to move on the spirit, Mr. Doc.
Huh?
Say
that again, Don? What'd you say?
You have to move on the spirit. When it's, you know, the spirit tell you to, or when the timing is right. Some time ain't right. You know what I'm saying?
Well, would you agree with that? 12, who should take the first step? All right, so we're in the elevator. And here I am with my good-looking self all in the elevator. You got other folk, and they got a white man in there, a white lady in there. Do we have to speak to each other? Or just stand there and look the other way or look in your phone or something?
I mean, both of them happen so often, but I think it's more cordial that you do speak. Sometimes if somebody doesn't even speak back, because obviously a damper has been put on their day for whatever the reason may be.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. That's right. I mean, what is it going to hurt you to be sociable? Right?
Don't hurt me. I don't care what color you is.
you know what I mean? Now, so 12, should I say, what's up? Or should I say, good morning, how are you? Which one, 12?
I mean, first of all,
okay.
I mean, I have my way of speaking, But what's no. up going up? Okay, that's for kids.
I'm messing with the 12. I'm messing with
I know, I know, I know. There's a right way and a wrong way as far as I'm concerned that we do anything, even as a child. If you teach them the right way, don't mean they're going to follow your footsteps because you taught it to them, but they know it.
Right.
That's
right,
the catch.
Right.
They know it, and when they screw up, even little kids, they'll look at you like, I didn't do that. And you're looking dead at them because they know they were wrong. They were taught. You know better than that.
Right.
Now, that's a tough question for me.
Why?
Because I'm going to serve you back your same energy. Now, if you ignorant and whatever else, I'll leave that to you. But if the first line of communication is visual. So if I get on the elevator and I try to make eye contact and you go looking all off down and over, I ain't got nothing to say. I'm going to look down off and around too until we can get off of it.
You gotta move with the spirit.
I mean, honestly, maybe that's wrong, but yeah, I'm not going to play into your games or nothing else.
What happens when you guys, I have a son, and he hardly ever smiles, and I can't see, I love to smile.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
but
okay.
I don't know, I never knew why he don't smile, and I still don't, it's just a part of his character. And some people have a problem with looking, making eye contact.
You can read other body language too. I think is
hold
what
on.
I'm.
Yeah,
trying
that's
to
true.
Say.
Yeah,
hold
that's
on.
True. But I used to have a problem with looking up at people and looking them dead in the eye. I don't have that problem anymore. I fixed it. Good. God fixed it for me. But I worried about that because I was raised where. When you talk to a person, number one, you're supposed to be able to look them in their eye. When you go for a job, you got to look that person in their eye. And the eyes, a lot of times, don't lie. You're right. But if you're not looking at them, they may be confused about how you actually feel or think.
Absolutely. Wow, y'all are hitting it now. See, one of the aspects of communication is to be able to, as you said, look at people, right? Look at me when you talk to me. Don't be looking down and all over the place. Look at me. Like now, a lot of that has to do with your own self-confidence, right?
Yeah.
And your own ability to know that you are worthy of someone looking you in the eye. You know who you are. Know what your purpose is. You got a right to be on that elevator, just like anybody. Feel what I'm saying? And it don't matter who come in there. If the boogerman came, you better look at me, Mr. Boogerman, and call me sir. Is that right, Don?
Well,
go ahead. I see St. Louis is joined. Go ahead, Senator.
Well, I mean, I respect everybody's right to feel or whatever, as long as you don't put your hands on me. You're not verbally bashing or abusing me, and I respect that. But what I have come to learn is with respecting that, people will come around later.
Mm.
Now, I have been mean at times and just left them with their first impression that they gave me. I'm going to treat you just like you treated me. I'm going to keep it moving. I'm going to wink a little eye and walk on past you and leave you alone. But with that, I mean, whatever somebody feels, just like white people that don't like black people, that's fine. As long as you're respectful and not liking me, I don't care.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Good point. Let me recognize St. Louis. St. Louis, welcome, sir. Talk us on the topic, how to conduct race relations in America. I know you just joined us. Anything that you want to? Based on the conversation,
how to do what with racial relations in America?
Conduct race relations in America.
Well, it depends on where you are, and really, I don't put too much emphasis on that. What you talking about race relations? Where are you? If you in Chicago, where you don't had over close to 5,000 blacks shoot other blacks, that ain't no white folks. Bad relationship. That's black relationship with black people.
Okay.
Right?
But we talk about But we are talking about blacks and whites getting along, wherever that is. That's what we used to, we made a good point. That's what we're talking
about.
Well,
you got 30% of black males with bachelor degrees are marrying white women. So apparently their relationship is doing pretty well.
Okay. Now, so I guess our greater question is, for those particular people that we were talking about earlier who are out there on the marching line, they say, or the protest, and they're making the case that all white people are evil and that they're complicit in the wrongs and the ills of America. This is what they're saying. This is the narrative. Is that fair, or how do you move beyond that?
Well, those people are crazy as hell.
That's what the
problem that if you don't look at, well, why come Nigerians don't have these problems?
Okay.
And when
all
you
right.
looked at that girl, that young lady out of Louisiana, out of Harvey in Louisiana, not New Orleans, she
mm-hmm.
came from a predominantly white community in Louisiana.
Okay.
And
okay.
she was homeschooled. She didn't go to a traditional school. So she came from an upper class black mother and father. And I don't think she is really black American. I think she's a product of maybe an African couple, but I'm not totally sure. But the thing is that that's not the problem. The problem, if you lay it out on the table, is academics and economics, and
okay.
one plays heavily with the other.
Okay. All right.
If you
got
20-some-odd percent of your population that's living below the poverty line, and when you have education equates to your ability to be able to sell your skills to the highest bidder in a particular field that you are educated in, and hopefully that you're being educated where you have a large demand.
Okay.
But when you look at
okay.
the population of those that you call black, and you
mm-hmm.
see that they are, as far as employment is concerned, they are heavily and disproportionately employed in areas like social workers and health
okay.
type of professions.
Okay.
Well, those
okay.
professions don't pay much money, so right then and there, you are qualifying yourself for one particular area, and that's economics. You are deficient
okay.
in that.
All right. All
so
right.
people that's deficient in either one of those are going to have a bad attitude, taste in their mouth, can't get along with themselves, let alone with somebody else.
Interesting. Okay, thank you for that. Now, I'm going to throw a question out here. Don, I know Don and I have talked, and he got on me many times about making reference to people as black people. And Don, I begin in the monologue explaining, a lot of these terms, I don't like them, but we use them because that's the quickest way to get people to understand where we're coming from. So you understand sociologically that when we talk about black, and let's use the capital B, Don, the noun, the people that have been associated with being black, okay? But now, Don, let me start with you in 3072 with this question. Should there be classes of black people, the upper
Hello?
Class, the middle class, the lower class? Y'all understand what I'm asking you? Should we allow that, Negro, black, and colored folks? Should we allow there to exist classism amongst the subgroups? I'm done in 37. Go ahead, 372.
Whether you allow it or not, it exists.
What?
Do you understand? It already exists. I mean,
explain it to me like I'm 3 years old. Explain it to me like I'm 3 years old.
You have the lower class, the upper lower class, the middle class. Define that. That's the people we're talking about that maybe live in public housing that have no education.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have mm-hmm. those people who made it out of public housing that maybe they do have a little bit, maybe associate's degree, but they're barely making it, and they can't afford to move out to an Eagle Landing area or a Brentwood area or a Beverly Hills area, but they're on the up and up. Then you have those people that are able, they have higher degrees, they have money, they have, you know, right. Mm. So, yeah, those classes to me, or they exist already.
Interesting. Okay. Let me just snowball at the Don. Come on, Don. I know you got something for me, Dylan. What you going to tell me tonight?
Well, those who got money still to have money still be crazy as hell.
Yeah.
I see that by himself.
Exactly. Yeah.
You ain't, listen here, you saying that you're a millionaire, but you in somebody else's vault. You ain't in your own vault.
Mm,
you
what?
Ain't sitting on the board of directors. But
okay.
You claim to be a millionaire. You know, you, okay, you probably do got cash in somebody else's
or
institution,
Don,
but you ain't
maybe
got
they not a millionaire.
Own.
They got credit. They got credit. Exactly. But you can't go pay that $450,000 house off. Go in your vault and go on and pay that off. Own that outright.
Well, now, so isn't it just as cruel as some would say the white man is to say that because of your condition, your socioeconomic condition, we're going to place you in the lower class? Aren't you a human being first?
Yeah.
Even if you don't have a degree, shouldn't you still be respected as an MD, a PhD,
yes,
or
should.
Someone with a date? Yeah, help me with that now.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yes, you should.
To say what they want.
Well, what
to say. But you can be what they consider lower class.
Uh-huh.
But being who you
what they consider,
be,
but you might not be there.
Be much higher class than they ever know how to be.
Wow.
Sure.
So class doesn't come from your dollars and your cents.
No.
Class, I've listened to some of the ignorant, high-class, so-called people speak. But what they fail to realize is that while you putting some point of finger at somebody else, you got some pointing back at you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now,
well, 8112 made a good point. She right. You look at some of the celebrities that have just made it because they reach stardom. They do some of the dumbest, most ignorantest things there is to do. And the only thing separating the two of you is the fact that, hey, they made it, you know, they made a record, or they did some rap stuff, or they're I don't know. So, yeah, I'm with her.
Yeah.
Money doesn't make a person great.
So, lady, I've been accused of not liking black people because I call out destructive, inappropriate behavior that many of my brothers and sisters have engaged in historically. And I offer ways they change that and improve. But I've been accused of not liking black people because I call it out. And I don't sugarcoat it. I don't mince words.
Those,
I call it like
those racists telling you that.
Is that what
they
mean? They
racist. Well, they're racist for telling you that.
Right.
They are calling you something, accusing you of being something that they don't know anything about you. They prejudge you. They're racist. But on the other thing, yes, I think that classifications are needed because that way you can look at a particular ethnic group in the population and see how well they are faring as far as sustainability, education, and being able to carry out the civic responsibilities. So that tells you a lot about the people. You know, it's a numerical category.
Okay. You say, Lois, I had a conversation, this has been a few years ago now, with the superintendent of schools here in Davidson County. He, in fact, he's deceased now, Pedro Garcia. And he asked me about what I thought about, you know, what was needed to, if you will, have an equal playing field. Because the reality is, for some time, we've had 47% of the population being African-American and they represent over 90% of the failing populace. Okay? And so I said to him, of the failing population in the school system, in other words, bad grades, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to him that it's really not so much about their skin color or their ethnicity as it is focusing on the orientation to embracing learning as a value.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So they're not failing just because they're, quote, black, end quote.
Yeah, that's a dumb thought.
Well, that's what I mean. They're failing.
Well, I don't know.
Well,
so Garcia's out now, isn't he?
He's deceased now.
Garcia's
yeah,
no longer the superintendent.
That's correct. He's deceased. He's dead. He's dead.
Oh,
now.
Did he pass away? I had no idea.
Yeah,
okay.
Some years ago.
You know what what you're looking at, Reuben, is a culture.
Mm-hmm.
You see, there's the American culture, then there's many subcultures of the American culture,
sure.
And they usually lie around particular ethnic groups.
Mm-hmm.
You can say
sure.
phenotypical groups.
Right.
When you look at a certain culture, there's a lot of data that's associated with that culture that you can just about depend on because it's so predominant and it's so fulfilling. I mean, it fulfills the narrative. So you can look at a certain area and you can just about predict what that performance in these areas are going to be. And it's a lot has to do with culture and the culture.
Sure.
Plays a part in how much the influence and participation from the adults and those of authority
sure.
plays
Absolutely.
In a child's education.
Good point. And so here's the thing, though, St. Louis and the rest of the town. Here's the reality. You're right. You have multiple cultural or ethnic experiences, and with that come different mindsets about, you know, values for certain things. But what bothers me is, Don, right here in Davidson County, we have over 5,000 educators, okay? All these black folks, and a good number of them African American, that are educated with advanced degrees. Why is it that we can't, if nobody else, find a way to make sure our children, those that look like us, come from a similar experience? And then I realize what my problem is, though, because I'm assuming that everybody sees the same thing, embraces the same thing. That's a poor assumption to make. But I'm just saying, it seems to me that if all of us want one accord, we can create the right strategies to make sure that 47% of the population does better academically. Don, what do you think about
that? Well,
1 second, 72. Let me hit Don. What you, I'm coming to you, 72. What do you think about that, Don?
Everything you're talking about, Mr. Darker, it goes back to education. And you know what I see right here in Dallas County? I'm going to say it again. We got Dallas County High, which is almost predominantly us. Southside is us. Keith High School is us. Selma High is us. And guess what? You don't take none of the baby boys out to teach them to build a house. And you wonder why the shooting and the banging is going on. We teach them nothing.
Right. Okay.
It ain't their fault. The grown-ups done dropped the ball. Come on now. Parents ain't even saying nothing. These are our children. We ain't going up to the school and say, hey, man.
Wow.
Why y'all ain't taking our young men out to teach them how to build a house?
You give my taxes.
Why you even got home economics for our daughters?
Wow.
Nobody's saying nothing.
Don, can I say something, please? I ain't mean to interrupt you, sir. But some young people do not want to know how to build a house. They could. They don't get.
You're right.
But some do.
To build
but
a house.
Some do.
Wait a minute. Not all of them. Because what works for one person don't mean it's going to necessarily work for the next. Even though they know they need the house to live in, just like you need to know how to plant a garden, as far as I'm concerned, so you can eat.
Mm-hmm.
people don't want to learn how to plant a seed. I raised a couple of them.
Well,
like some people don't want to lay how to lay a brick and lay the foundation to build your house. Life is like you got to have a foundation within your structure of your life. And it's up to you, it's up to your parent to a certain point. But after you reach that point as an adult, it is up to that individual to be hungry enough for it, to want it enough for it, to work hard enough for it, and to have it. Well, I mean, everybody may not agree. I agree to agree.
No. You're saying something interesting. I'm listening because I got a point that I want to make, but I want to give everybody else a chance first. So what were you going to say, 76?
I'm sorry, I wasn't trying to cut you off, 8112, but I was going to say, just trying to answer your question as to why we don't, because of classism. That's what you're not getting.
But
because of classism, the old saying, somebody's going to be got to be at the top, and somebody has to be at the bottom.
But you
people are wanting to maintain their status, and if I'm pulling everybody up with me, then that may mean I'm not just at the top. I may have to fall in the middle. I may have to fall off to the side or possibly to the bottom if they master this thing better than me. Secondly, the building the house thing, Don, is phenomenal because not only are you building your house, that creates job, work. I know somebody that's making almost $9,000 a month. A supervisor that travels in construction. What he doing? He got his son doing it. He's trying to get other men in his family to do it. But guess what? And he's talking about paying them $22 to $25 an hour. But they don't want to travel.
What?
You feel me? So we're going to have to come out of our comfort zone. And, yeah, again, classism, I don't know how great of an idea that is altogether.
But
once again, and I agree with you to a certain point, is not for everybody. Because you suggested as their parents, as their peers, as we all know, if we all have children or had children and they are adults, a lot of time when they reach a certain age, they become rebellious.
And if they want to be on the street, 8112, if they want to rebel and be on the street and homeless, then that's why I have to let them know that's what's going to happen, but they should start somewhere.
Yes, everybody has to start somewhere. And a lot of people fall before they really get what people call up. A lot of people fall, and they go back to the crawling stage almost as adults.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, if you have the courage to get back up on your feet, the way I see it, is that that takes a lot of courage for a lot of people.
Sure does.
It takes a lot of courage, and if they do it, then they figure, I can do this. And some people don't mind sharing that knowledge. There's a guy coming back to Illinois and giving back to the community. Well, I know it's a big place, but I don't know how he's going to get back to everybody, but probably his home front, where he came from, the neighborhood.
Okay.
And I thought that was a beautiful thing. Now I'm going to be quiet because I'm taking up too much time.
I like what you're saying. What were you going to say, St. Louis? And I want to make a point.
Selma High School, that's on 2180 Broad Street, where you got 819 black students in it. The student-teacher ratio is 26 students to one teacher. That's really kind of terrible. But the graduation rate, 89%. Math proficiency is 6%. Reading proficiency is 10%. So that's academic deficiency that's going on at the school. That needs to be changed. And only the people can do this. Ain't nobody else going to do this for you. See, this is what it is. You're talking about competition. Nobody is going to teach your child how to compete against theirs. I don't care what they look like or what they sound like. They're just not going to do it.
St. Louis, you're dead on it. And listen to this, Mr. Doctor. This is the home of the right to vote movement. You can go in the public library right now. You can't find 15 volumes of Frederick Douglass. And that's where my dad got the right to vote idea from.
Okay.
See, talk, well, it goes down. Back to the parent. Like he said, how do you want your child to be educated? It's up to the parents. I went to a mama today. You know what mama I went to? My own son. And you ought to see her response. It's sad.
Well, but again, back to the classism and competing, and I disagree with that idea that you're teaching somebody else's child. I'm not teaching them. I'm creating a better world. I'm creating less of a chance that my daughter won't be able to find, or my grandchild, a husband that's educated. Or, you know, right, you have to look beyond just yourself. And today,
interesting.
But way into tomorrow, the next year's coming even.
Let me interject this.
Well, it's gonna get worse, being that artificial intelligence is gonna eliminate about 40% of the jobs that we have today. It's gonna get worse.
If we're not proactive, it can get worse. Right. That's why I promote entrepreneurship, because when you create the need. And you supply something that is in demand, right? You control that. Don't nobody control that. But I want to introduce this thought. Y'all saying something interesting. The proposition, and I realize, 12, that everybody don't think and perhaps didn't raise their children or wouldn't raise them like I raised mine. But here was the basic proposition to them when they got old enough to understand and comprehend. When they started going to school, your job is to go make A's, and I'll accept maybe a few B's, okay? And the expectation is that you treat your teachers, every one of them, with the same respect and honor you give your mother and I. Your reward for
that's
that
true.
Is the food you eat, clothes you wear, roof over your head, and every now and then some zuzus and wham-whams. We'll throw that in there, too. What am I saying? I'm saying that this was an expectation for them that you will finish school, and we send both of them to college. We expect you to finish that, and hopefully you bring a few crumb snatchers in the world. Give us some grandbabies. You understand? And do something good in society. That was a basic expectation. What's wrong with setting that for all of our children? That was my question. What's wrong with saying that for all of our children? Irregardless of what your economic condition is. You understand what I'm saying? Anybody want to help
Mr.
you
Doctor.
With that? Yes, sir.
Mr. Doctor.
Yes, sir.
I say this, too. We brothers sometimes don't communicate to our sisters directly either. We don't talk to them about business either.
No, we don't.
You know what I'm saying? You can't believe sisters out here and you don't talk business talk to them.
Right.
See, that's on the brothers, too.
Well,
we never give a dialogue with our sisters even discussing economics.
I agree with that, too, Don. Here's the problem, though. If you don't have nothing, and I don't mean this demeaning, Don, but if a brother don't have nothing on his mind, what are you going to do? A body? Can I talk about it, 12? Can I talk about it? If you ain't got nothing on your man, you don't have a plan. What do you think about her body and making babies?
Well, I think most of them got something on their man, sir. I also think that it plays a role in what your mind is on. If that's the only thing is on, they'll make it known to that woman, even though they may lie and get what they want. But
what?
One day, truth will come to light, so it is what it is. Let's talk reality now.
Okay. So
ain't nobody looking for one thing, talking about no doggone business.
There were some young cats that I talked to on the streets of Nashville, and I told them about some opportunities, Don, that were in the agricultural industry. State of Tennessee had money. President Obama had set aside money from a lawsuit from the tobacco industry, right? And it was geared for minorities. They will loan you the land. All you have to do is work it till it make a profit and pay taxes, and you're good to go. You don't even have to pay it back. It was a grant. That's what they told
me. Wow.
You believe that?
Huh?
You believe that? I got a whole lot of people tell me, if you don't pay it back.
Yeah, I know that to be true. I know one young man, they gave some land in the house, too, and he turned around and gave it right back to him.
What? Why?
Go ahead.
Why, Don?
No, this is real.
I don't know. I'm still wondering why. His daddy showed me how the process worked. And I'm sitting there looking at him, man, you got a house and some land, and then you turn around and give it back to the good old boys, and they don't let you in. I don't get it. Somebody help me.
I wouldn't have gave it back.
Let me finish this,
why they gave it to him, because he's going to have to pay taxes. If he falls short and can't pay them taxes, it's still theirs.
Okay, hold on.
Yeah, they come back and get their land.
Well, that's fine.
No,
I'll try to pay the taxes.
He's an individual. That he's an individual. To me, I'm being spoiled.
Well, let me say this.
If they let you in, why don't you keep it? My
granddaddy
was let in.
This is a great conversation. Hold on one second, guys. This is a great conversation. Here's the point. And I said to the young guys, look, man, yes, you're going to have to work, and yes, you're going to have to be accountable for the money you make off of it. You can't just go and you don't have to pay a certain amount of taxes, right? You know what they told me? They said, man, ain't nobody going to be in no am slavery again talking about something going in the field. I said, you slave to the streets now. You out here singing and banging, man.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying?
Well, there are programs like that where the agency, whether it's the agriculture agency, will come in and show you how to raise goats and provide you with the kid goats, show you how to raise chickens and provide you with the chicks.
Yep.
If you got timber on your land, they come in and show you how to take that timber and turn it into a cash crop.
Right.
So those programs do exist.
I can find a program just for a hobby to get my house redone. Those programs exist, but people don't know it.
Yeah,
seriously.
They do. If you're a certain age, they'll come in and there's a student to come in and repair your whatever is ailing you.
Yeah.
They got many programs, but there's always a catch to it.
Well, it's a responsibility, 12. Yes,
it is. I'm going to, believe me, I struggle. I know about responsibility.
Okay. Yes, no, I know you do.
But I own my home outright, and they still can take it if I don't do my due diligence and pay my taxes.
Right.
Well, just pay your taxes, honey.
Well, honey, they pay. That ain't my point.
Okay.
My point is sometimes people fall short in life and don't have that money they talking about. My taxes.
What do they usually do when you behind in taxes? You get 3 years behind the taxes.
You get
then
two.
Yeah.
You don't get three chances.
Okay, if you get 2 years behind taxes. But generally go like this. You get 2 years behind in taxes. The county come in and sell your house. But the person buy it has a certain period of time that allows you to come and pay them for what they pay so you can recover your house.
Exactly. I know all about all of it. But thank you for that information. If I didn't know, somebody else I know, but I do know now.
Let me bring caller from 434, 4481. You just joined us. We got about 10 minutes, caller. Welcome to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dyer. We're talking from how to conduct race relations in America. And, again, we just have a few minutes. You caught us on the tail end. I wish you could have joined us. But let me just give you an opportunity if you wanted to say something very briefly, and then because we're going to be wrapping up the rest of our conversation.
My name's Khalil Reed.
Okay.
What we need to do for, race relations, we need to have a balance. We need to, there's so many people that will talk about, will act like they're on our side, like a lot of right-wingers, like Ann Coulter and Jesse Lee Peterson. They'll sit there and they'll try to talk about who's selling us out or try to use us to divide and conquer.
Okay.
But when it comes back to race issues, they're not serious about it. It's like, don't be telling us about Abraham Lincoln, and don't be doing stuff like accusing somebody else who's black of selling us out because they don't want to do divide and conquer on immigration and abortion. It's like, make up your mind. If you're going to do that, then at least know what you're talking about, because you can't be afford to be a sellout and then accuse someone of being a sellout for something that's not really selling it out. And that's something that hasn't been addressed. Because we do need a balance. I understand taking personal responsibility, but at the same time, it's not it shouldn't be taken too far.
I see what you're saying. I take your point. Okay, okay. Well, I wish you could have joined us a little earlier. That's an interesting point. We might just continue our conversation a little bit Thursday night from 7 to 9. We continue. We'll probably have a different topic, but we'll open the floor for that. Great. I think you make a very valid point, because it's really not about whether you say you're Democrat or Republican. And we talk
right.
about how to get along in America. It's really about all of us as citizens and brothers and sisters in the country and the nation, and being able to work with one another, respect one another based
mm-hmm.
on our
mm-hmm.
views and differences and things of that nature. So I think you make a really good point. You do have a lot of voices out there, man, that are just stirring the pot and banging noise, making noise to where the average person don't really know what to think or what to believe. That's not doing anyone any good either. So I think that's a valid point, Jane. Thank you for sharing that with us there. And again, I hate that our time has about got away from us here. Great conversation. We're talking from the general topic, how to conduct race relations in America. I really am personally more concerned about our young people understanding that you should have a position on things, but don't allow your anger to drive your actions, because you'll say and do things that you won't be able to take back. Right, and as a young person, you don't need to set yourself up for failure at a young age. You got the rest of your life ahead of you. That would be my recommendation, advice. Great conversation. Let's go around and get a final thought from everybody. Let's start with you, 3072.
Well, I was just going to recommend that we had a show just giving resources out to people. We were just talking
okay.
about those grants and things like that that people can that didn't know about can maybe look up and take advantage of. Maybe one day
okay.
we can discuss something like yeah. that.
I got you. I'm writing it down right now. All right. Thank you. That's a great recommendation. Thank you so much. Thanks for joining us there, 3072. What about it?
Thank you.
Okay.
Oh. No comment.
All right. Thank you, sir. We appreciate you joining us here tonight. Don, give me a final thought, big brother, to take us home. Out of Alabama.
I kind of agree with the sister when she was talking about telling folk about grants. We should be telling folk about organic fertilizers, natural seeds, plant status, how to get in contact with cultivators, how to get tractors to break ground, disc ground, or to get the resources
okay.
to get those tractors and maintain those tractors. And,
great point. We'll put
the resources to fertilize the land. That's resources
yes,
for that. You know, I said, organic fertilizer, man. You know, we got that. We got the you know, it's on the people, man. You know, if the people ain't thinking positive, doing positive things, ain't nothing gonna happen. They won't got to make
you.
It happen.
Well, we have about at least 6 or 7 states that regularly been communicating with us in Pittsburgh. We'll pull from them some of the resources, government level and private industry resources that people can tap into that's available to them. That'd be a great show.
Well,
thank you so much. Go ahead, Dan. St. Louis, you want
to
start off?
That's up to your elected officials to come back to your community and have town hall meetings and explain to you and reveal to you and share to you those programs, whether they're grants or whatever, that exist. It's not happening. It's not, and then if you're going out doing this individually and depending on telling somebody else, well, that's not the greatest good.
Okay.
That's coming
excuse
out
me,
of it.
Yeah, go ahead.
So your elected officials, whether it's at the state level in particular or at the federal level, your congressperson, you ain't going to get the senator in. They're supposed to come in and have town hall meetings with their constituents and explain to them and share to them what it is you need to know. And another thing, it is about politics and political parties, because when you get to where you understand the platform of these political parties, then you're going to choose. See, the class is good because the class tells you what the group is doing. But those in the upper class, from working hard, having a good education, a high-paying wage, if they're going to tend to not be courting these liberals. Why? Well, for one simple reason, they want to raise your taxes. Another simple reason, because they want to tax your money that you have in the bank that you want to leave to your kids in many cases.
Bring that back, sir. Bring that back, sir. That's a long conversation we have now, but I hear what you're saying. I appreciate it. Let me go around. We got a few more minutes to get everybody else here. But thank you, sir. We appreciate that. Okay. 8112.
Yes, okay. It's time for me to go. However, I respect everybody's opinion, and I thank you for having me once again. Love you guys.
Always.
Stay safe and take care.
Always a pleasure to have you. All right, 4481, sorry we caught you at the tail end of the show. Let me give you the last word here before we get out. Call us from California, 4481, last four digits of your number. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, let me give you the right quickly about 30 seconds of a final thought before we cut out.
My final thought is we all should respect each other and respect our own culture. You know, it should be no balance. I mean, it should be no choosing. We all need to be proud of our culture and then not and be proud of and respect other people's cultures. There's no choosing between the two.
Agreed. Yeah. Agreed. Wow. Well, thank you. Feel free to join us Thursday night at 7 o'clock. We'll be back for another episode. We'll leave room to wrap up this discussion. Great comments. Thank you for joining us tonight here on Talk Straight. Okay. All right. Well, yes, sir. Yes, sir. You've been listening to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Thackeray. Our topic tonight was how to conduct race relations in America. I've learned a great deal from the dialogue tonight, and I believe that we have the basis for being able to move forward, not have to be against anybody, but be for us all. And we'll look forward to coming back Thursday night with a slightly continuation and a new topic of discussion for Talk Straight. This is your host again, Reverend Dr. Reuben Thackeray, and we look forward to seeing you guys then. Marvin Gaye is going to finish us off tonight with his rendition of the national anthem that he sang back in 1983 at a basketball game. We'll see you Thursday. That I'm